This episode is brought to you by Coinbase Institutional, the first choice of sophisticated investors and institutions that want to invest in crypto assets. As the only publicly traded company with experience trading and custodying digital assets at scale, over 11,000 clients use Coinbase products like Prime and Exchange. Coinbase also recently announced that they're on the path to launching derivatives. Invest in the most trusted name in crypto. Learn more at coinbase.com/institutional.
Here's your money briefing for Tuesday, April 26th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. It's Student Debt Week on the show, our week-long look at taking on, managing, and eventually repaying student debt. Today's all about financial aid. The high cost of attending some of the nation's top private colleges and universities might scare some lower and middle-income families away from even applying. But it turns out many of these schools may actually be within their financial reach.
It's important for people to research the kind of financial aid that a school gives if they're thinking about applying to it. Don't assume that the dream school is unaffordable.
On today's show, we'll be joined by reporter Andrea Fuller. She specializes in data analysis and co-wrote the WSJ's Guide to Student Loans. We'll talk with her about how to comparison shop and find the best deal for a quality college. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Coinbase Institutional, the first choice of sophisticated investors and institutions that want to invest in crypto assets. As the only publicly traded company with experience trading and custodying digital assets at scale, over 11,000 clients use Coinbase products like Prime and Exchange. Coinbase also recently announced that they're on the path to launching derivatives. Invest in the most trusted name in crypto. Learn more at coinbase.com/institutional.
So you've had the talk about how to pay for college, and you and your soon-to-be college students start looking around for schools. You look at the ratings, the programs, the facilities, and then you see the sticker price. Well, after picking yourself up off the floor, what next? Do you move on, or are there ways of getting that top-line number down a bit to make it more affordable? WSJ reporter Andrea Fuller has looked into this, and she joins me now. Andrea, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, Andrea, yesterday we talked about how when you're thinking about the financial side of college, it's important to set the right expectations from the get-go. But if you think about a student loan from the perspective of a lower or middle-income family who really wants to go to a top private college, they might see that the costs could be over $80,000 a year, which is not unheard of, and they might just throw up their hands and say, well, there's no way I could afford that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they shouldn't. That's a common reaction. People box themselves out from even applying to these expensive schools because they have this high sticker price. But actually, families should consider that they actually might be eligible for financial aid at these schools, whether it's need-based aid based on their family income or merit-based aid based on scholarships. They shouldn't totally say, oh, this school costs $80,000 a year. There's no way we could afford that. The net price is actually often much, much lower than the sticker price. And families can research this. They can look at something called the Common Data Set, which a lot of schools publish. They publish, you know, their average scholarship amount. They can also look at something called College Navigator or the College Scorecard to find more information about the net price that students actually end up paying. The government actually has schools release it by income band. You know, what's the net price for families earning, you know, less than $50,000 a year? And it's important for families to know what they likely would end up paying at a given school. And it may be far, far less than the sticker price. That's how we know that on average, Yale is charging less than $5,000 a year to low-income families. This is in the government's data, and you can easily look it up just as we did.
Yeah, you were part of a team that dug into the numbers, and you found a couple dozen schools that actually fit the bill.
Absolutely. We looked at some data from the federal government that shows what colleges actually end up charging families from these low and middle income brackets. And for low income families, we found there were a couple dozen schools that have a price for low income families of less than $5,000 a year. That's much more affordable. Now, there's also, you know, a lot of financial aid for middle income families, even at these schools. There are some schools, particularly Ivy League schools and their peers, that if you're from a family that makes less than $150,000, $200,000 a year, you don't have to pay tuition. That's an incredible deal. And I think a lot of families don't know about that. And so they box themselves out from applying to more expensive private schools, thinking that they can't afford it.
And you said less than $5,000 for some families? That's a far cry from the $80,000 or more, you know, the top line cost for some of these schools. How are they able to bring down the price so much?
These schools are schools with large endowments. They're Ivy League schools. There are also other wealthy private schools like Duke, like Georgetown, that have a lot of money to give scholarships to low-income and middle-income families. Other private schools are more cash-strapped and don't have the resources to do that. And so it's important for people to research the kind of financial aid that a school gives if they're thinking about applying to it. Don't assume that the dream school is unaffordable just because you're a family that makes $100,000 a year.
Okay, so it all sounds great, but how common really is it for top schools to bring down their costs so much like that?
So it's very common if you get admitted, and that's the trick. There are a lot of wealthy schools that do this, but not every wealthy school does this. There are some wealthy schools that spend their money in a different way. They don't offer generous scholarships to low-income families. They can be quite expensive. However, they offer more merit scholarships. Now, if you're from a lower-income family, this is bad news. Or if you're from, say, an upper-middle-income family that's still cost-conscious but is thinking about ways to get that bill reduced, then applying to a college that's known for offering a lot of merit scholarships, scholarships for students with high GPAs or SAT scores, things that help them in rankings, because a lot of these schools that are wealthy but still not, you know, as wealthy as Harvard, because nobody else is, offer financial aid to star students in order to get them to enroll in their school as opposed to another school.
Now, are lower or middle income students better off trying to get into one of these top schools that are still affordable?
Well, these schools are very, very hard to get into. Schools like Harvard have extremely low acceptance rates, less than 10%, you know, often in the 5% ballpark. They're very competitive because these are seen as the most prestigious schools in the country. Another element to that is, you know, you have a lot of families who know that these schools offer very, very good financial aid, and they're all vying for a spot too. And so the chance of being accepted, whether you need financial aid or not, is already extremely low. So counting on, well, I'll get into Princeton and it'll be free, isn't something that you can do.
Yeah, and to take that a step further, even for the students who do get in, not everyone's going to end up getting a scholarship. So does that mean they just have to bite the bullet at that point?
Students who don't get a lot of financial aid may be tempted to just sign up for the first school that lets them in and take the debt and pay for it. That is a risky proposal. Only about 2/3 of students, and we're talking about undergraduate students here, actually make it to graduation. And so if you're going to a very expensive school, you need to sort of plan out in advance, what are you going to do with that degree? Are you definitely going to finish? What are your earnings prospects in the future? People need, in applying, to apply to a variety of schools. They need to have safety schools that are affordable, places they know that they can get in, and places that they know they can afford.
So let's talk about other options that students might consider. You mentioned the admission rate of the nation's top private schools is low. So are there other places where low and middle-income students might be able to get a high-caliber education and not pay an arm and a leg?
Absolutely. Some of the nation's top public schools offer very generous need-based scholarships as well, particularly to low-income families. Not so much to those middle-income and upper-middle-income families that are making $200,000 a year, but particularly to low-income families, places like Michigan, UNC, Texas A&M offer very generous financial aid. And this is really important for families to know that these schools also are going to offer generous resources. And there are dozens of public schools that have a very low net price for low and middle income families. And these are great colleges. And so I think sometimes people think, you know, that they must go to a private school. But in reality, there's great financial aid opportunities from public schools as well.
Yeah, let's talk more about those other opportunities. Are there other options to consider that could be smart from a financial standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's say you do have your heart set on an expensive private school and mom and dad can't make it work. So a lot of schools, both public and private schools, have community college to four-year college transfer pipelines. And so you could spend 2 years at a community college and then transfer to that dream school. This is also an option, not just for financial reasons, but if you don't get into that dream school, transferring is always an option. And so doing 2 years at a cheaper school and then transferring to that more expensive school is certainly a pathway that I think not as many students consider it as maybe should.
And then for whatever costs are left over after grants and scholarships, there are, of course, loans. Can you give us a quick overview of the kinds of loans that are available?
So most people aren't going to get everything covered. There are a few, a very tiny sliver of colleges that are loan-free. These are, again, these very wealthy Ivy League schools and their peers that don't package loans as part of their financial aid packages. Most schools do. So the loans you need to know about, they're subsidized loans. These are federal Stafford loans. That's the name of the loan program. These are available based on financial need. That means they don't accumulate interest while the student is in school. There's also unsubsidized loans that start accruing interest right away, which is important for students to take into account because that can add up if they have a lot of them. Students, however, are limited in the amount that they can borrow. There's a set amount that the government allows students to borrow each year, depending on what year they're in school, and it's less than $10,000. So if you're going to a very expensive school, you can't cover that based on loans in your own name unless you go get private loans. In terms of federal loans, the government allows parents to take out parent plus loans to cover the full cost of attendance. So no matter what the school charges, your family could take out a parent plus loan. Now, these have higher interest rates than the student loans. There are downsides to doing this, but they can cover tuition, fees, books, meals, housing, room and board, everything in the cost of college.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Andrea Fuller with us. Andrea, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thanks for having me.
You can find more insights into comparison shopping and researching schools' financial aid packages in the WSJ Guide to Student Loans ebook. It's free for anyone to download. You can find a link to it in the show notes. And coming up on tomorrow's episode, once you've researched the affordability of a school, now it's time to apply for financial aid. And for many, that part of the process is no less intimidating.
It feels invasive for a lot of families to have to open up their bank accounts, open up their files and tell somebody, here's how much money we make, here's how much money we spend, here's how much we think we can afford, and here's how much you think we can afford.
We demystify the college loan application process tomorrow as Student Debt Week continues on Your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Coinbase Institutional, the first choice of sophisticated investors and institutions that want to invest in crypto assets. As the only publicly traded company with experience trading and custodying digital assets at scale, over 11,000 clients use Coinbase products like Prime and Exchange. Coinbase also recently announced that they're on the path to launching derivatives. Invest in the most trusted name in crypto. Learn more at coinbase.com/institutional.